Call the meeting to order. Welcome, everybody. I'd like to approve the minutes. Representative Johnson moves that the minutes of February 25th, 2014 be approved. Representative Johnson? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes have been approved. Good afternoon, Chairman. Representative Atkins, welcome to the committee. Representative Atkins moves House File 2293 be re-referred to the General Register. We have a number of people signed up to testify today, so the plan moving forward is to give 30 minutes to the proponents of the bill as well as 30 minutes to the opponents of this bill, leaving another 30 minutes for discussion and questions from members of the committee. So with that in mind, Representative Atkins, please explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will be relatively brief. I, like you, am more interested in hearing from the testifiers than from me. But I would ask each of you to think of the highest interest rate that you've ever encountered on a loan. Is there anybody that lived through the period of time when you were getting home loans that were in that 12, 13, 14%? I see Representative Dean, Representative Tice, anybody that has had interest rates higher than that? Credit card loans, maybe, or what's the, Representative Tice, what's the, on a home loan?
18%.
And, you know, credit cards, if you don't pay, you can incur 22, 25, 29%. What we're talking about in the realm of payday loans are interest rates in excess of 391%. People who use payday lenders are not lesser members of society. They're not idiots. What they are folks that are getting treated as second-class citizens under Minnesota law. The current law, as I said, allows an interest rate of up to 391.34% for a payday loan in Minnesota. Literally 391% is the interest rate that you are allowed to be charged under Minnesota law. I actually voted for that. A number of members of this committee voted for that. This bill came before, or a version of this came before us about four or five sessions ago, and I voted for it for two reasons. Those two reasons were simple. Number one, there's a high rate, at least it was purported, that there's a high rate of default, that these are the sorts of borrowers that 10 to 20% of the time across the country default on their loan. They don't pay it back. So the lender has a ton of risk when they make a payday loan. The second reason is because people face emergencies. You know, your car breaks down, you've got to get it fixed right away, or you can't get to your job. So you've got to be able to, you might otherwise lose your job, or you need it for groceries. I mean, it's the kind of thing where it's an emergent and urgent sort of situation. Those were the two reasons that were given. Those both proved to be not entirely true. On the first item, the high rate of default, the rate of default in Minnesota is under 2%. So this argument that you have to have this 391% interest rate because people are going to default on the loans just simply isn't true. Literally on the Payday America site, which I happened to visit today, they said their default rate is less than 2%. The second point is that it's for emergencies. The car breaks down, you got to be able to get to your job. The fact is the average person, I believe this is according to the Pew Research, the average borrower gets 10 of these, not one or two or three. You know, and I can imagine people have more than one emergency, right? And you're going to hear, I suspect you're going to hear from folks that are going to say, you know what, there was a time I was desperate, there was nowhere else I could turn. This doesn't stop that. This bill does not get in the way of people's ability to get that emergency loan. Not just once, or twice, or three emergencies a year, but literally, if you have four emergencies a year, you can still go and get that 391% loan. The math on that is simple. That's $100. You pay it back at the next payday. So 2 weeks you have that loan. With the fees that are charged and the interest that comes with it, it's a 391% return. I'm not trying to stop it altogether, and that's why I supported this 4 years ago, to allow payday loans to be made, to continue to be made in Minnesota. People do face those emergency situations that arise, and we're not trying to stop that from occurring. But when it becomes a pattern of loans, when it's 5 or 10 or 15 of these same kinds of loans every year, those sorts of borrowers ought to get the same protections that Representative Tice got when she got her 18% loan, which probably just, you know, drove you nuts back then, but it was the best you could do. Or Representative Dean got when he was paying that, or if you've ever been paying on your credit cards and you got 22 or 25 or 28%, those sorts of protections are afforded to everybody else. They shouldn't, payday loans shouldn't be treating borrowers like second-class citizens. They should get the same protections that every other Minnesotan gets. One thing that I will call your particular attention to or special attention to is lines 4.31 through 5.4 of the bill. And I've kind of done a quick walkthrough. The main impetus for this, or the main thrust, is it does limit the number of loans. But particularly appalling to me are payday lenders who take advantage of members of the armed services, and worse yet, their family members. No member of our military, let alone their family, ought to be treated as a second-class citizen. So we've got a section in the bill that specifically applies to those members of the military and makes certain that they are those disclosures that are made under CFR, I think it's 235, section 235, that those disclosures are made to members of the military. Or worse yet, when they're stationed abroad and that there's their own family members back here who face tough times, they are able to get the necessary disclosures being made to them so that they don't get stuck in a loan that it's a challenge to get back out from under. With that, Madam Chair, that brief overview, I know that you've got 30 minutes of testifiers on both sides, and I'd like to get started with the proponents of the bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Atkins. And you do have an amendment I thought I saw. Is that true?
There's an author's amendment, and I have a slight tweak to that amendment, if I might.
Go ahead.
On the A1 amendment, I'll move the A1 amendment with this change to it. It should say on line 1.2 of the amendment, page 5, delete lines 11 through 24, and then delete line 1.3 altogether. So again, I'll repeat just to make sure you have it. On line 1.2, it should say page 5, delete lines 11 through 24. And then on line 1.3 of the amendment, it should delete that altogether. And then that captures that entire, and this is pender approved in terms of form. Just wanted to make sure that it then captured the entire piece that we're trying to be as reasonable as we can in terms of passage of this. And we recognize that issue might cause some heartburn, so we're removing that section. With that, Madam Chair, that's an author's amendment. I appreciate approval.
Thank you, Representative Atkins. Members, does everyone have that change to that amendment? Okay. Any questions? Any on the amendment? If none seen, all in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Aye, the amendment is adopted. Go ahead. We will begin then with our testifiers. And if I could ask the testifiers to come down. Brian Rush, Joint Religious Legislative Coalition, could you come to the table, please?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Atkins, for bringing this legislation forward. I'm Brian Rushi with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. Okay. Our effort in this area started a couple of years ago when this issue was flagged for us by Holy Trinity Lutheran Church, Longfellow neighborhood in Minneapolis. You'll hear in a minute from Megan, who is with that congregation. But we began to research this issue by looking at national trends, looking at the Pew Charitable Trust research that Representative Atkins just referenced. And we also looked very carefully at Department of Commerce data. And so I want you to know that a lot of what we're talking about comes directly from the department and the reporting that the industry needs to do. What opened our eyes the most, I think, are the following. First of all, payday loans, the number of loans issued have doubled in the last 5 years. So this is a industry that has really grown and has begun to pop up in places where it didn't used to exist. And about 380,000 loans were issued in 2012. We'll get the 2013 data in about a month. But 380,000 loans in the state of Minnesota. And 5 years ago, it was like 170,000. So you can see it's doubled in the last 5 years. The loans, as Chairman Atkins said, they always carry a triple-digit interest rate. The average is around 270% APR. It varies depending on the size of the loan, but they often go up to 300, 400, even 600% APR. And I think in your packet is a chart that shows the allowable fees and interest rates calculated as APRs. What also caught our attention is that there's a loophole in the law that allows a large amount of payday lending to occur around the payday lending law. The industrial loan and thrift companies can do payday loans at even higher rates than the payday lending law that you passed allows. And I think that that is something that wasn't intended and needs to be addressed so that everybody's treated the same under the law. Representative Atkins referenced this. I want to underline it. 69%, almost 70% of first-time payday borrowers take out their first loan for expected ongoing expenses. This is, I think, something different than what the industry markets itself as, which is a cure for emergencies. I mean, clearly that does happen. I'm not trying to dismiss that. But the normal situation is somebody is under financial stress, really challenged to make rent and groceries, and they go to the payday loan, and they find themselves then in a cycle of debt. And as was said, the average Minnesota borrower, average, takes out 10 in a year. And we know this from Department of Commerce data. We're looking at a trend around the country. I mean, we are, I think, as a nation, beginning to realize that the debt trap is harmful to families and to people. 17 states have effectively banned it, either with outright bans or regulations that are so strict that the industry has shrunk back. 5 other states have done stringent regulations. I would say that our proposal is amongst that set. We're not trying to eliminate the industry. We're pursuing what you call a loan cap. 4 loans in a year or 90 days of indebtedness. So the industry will be able to make loans 1, 2, 3, and 4. So it will still exist. In Delaware and Washington, loan caps have been passed, and the industry still does a certain amount of business in those states. The heart of our bill addresses what we think are the predatory aspects of this product, keeping people in debt over time and at extraordinarily high interest rates. The last thing I want to mention is the military provision that Representative Atkins put in his bill. Unfortunately, Colonel Mike Moran couldn't be here today, but he supports this provision and wanted you to know that payday lending just wreaks havoc on junior troops in particular. He told me on the phone that it's the 18 and 19-year-olds that really get into this. They don't know where this is going, and they find themselves trapped in debt. And as you know, military families are often moved around the country. They're apart from their extended family and friends. They have moving expenses. Multiple deployments have put a lot of stress on military families. So he wanted me to be sure that he was quoted today as saying that he supports that provision of the bill. With that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions. Otherwise, I think Megan from Holy Trinity is next.
Any questions, members, about this witness, or should we go to the next witness? I don't see any questions, so we're going to go to Megan. Come down, please. I think we'll hear the testifiers first, members, and then we'll go to questions after. Okay. If you'd please introduce yourself and give us your name and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Megan Olson-Biebighauser. I work as the parish organizing leader at Holy Trinity Lutheran Church. We're in South Minneapolis. And we first became curious about this issue when an Ace Cash Express opened up on East Lake Street, 500 feet from our church, just on the same block as our church. And it caught our interest because we already had a payday lending business not 4 blocks away. And so we started asking questions about what does this mean for our neighborhood? What does this mean for families in our congregation, families in our community? And we started having conversations and doing some listening both within the congregation, in the membership, and outside in the neighborhood and in the community, and just heard several stories from folks who had been stuck in this debt trap, thought it would be a good idea, and instead of building the assets that they needed, just found themselves further and further in debt. And so we brought the issue to the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition because we were concerned about the wealth that was systematically being extracted from our neighborhood and our community, and felt called as Christians to take some action on this, and thought that with the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition that the interfaith community could also do some work on this. So, thank you.
Well, thank you for your testimony. I appreciate it. We'll ask the next testifiers, Daryl Dahlhammer from Lutheran Social Services of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
State your name for the tape, please, and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Daryl Dahlhammer, and I am representing Lutheran Social Service Financial Counseling. Thank you for allowing me to share a few experiences of the clients who we counsel who have had payday lending. I think it helps to hear real stories. Lutheran Social Service, by the way, provides budget and debt counseling to over 10,000 Minnesotans every year, so we have a wide swath of what's happening in our state from all levels of income and all walks of life and all corners of our state. In my 14 years at LSS, I've seen story after story about how payday loans have turned into a debt trap, even though they weren't intended that way. So I'd like to share two stories as the core of my testimony, please, about how payday loans have created a cycle of debt, which is our core issue. The first is a client who we saw who's 65 years old and lives in Duluth. He lives on Social Security and a part-time job, like many of our citizens. His hours at work were reduced, and when that happened, that was the trigger for his first payday loan of $700 to fill in for living expenses. He was clear that's why he took it. Like most payday loan customers, 2 weeks later came, and he couldn't pay the full loan plus interest, so he did what most do. He paid the interest and rolled over the balance into another loan. By the time he came to LSS for help, his debt had grown to 6 payday loans. It's typical for people to start with one loan and fall into the trap of multiple loans. The second client is a 43-year-old woman living in the northwest suburbs, 15 miles from here, working both a full-time and a part-time job. I'm going to quote what she told us. She said, "When you're not making much money at your hourly shift job, you do what you have to do, and you might get a payday loan. The thought process is, when you get your next check, you'll pay back that loan, and you'll have some money left over. It's easy to miscalculate your paycheck." I'm going to read that again. "It's easy to miscalculate your paycheck when you're an hourly employee, and then you end up short the next pay period. So you just take another loan, and so it goes." When she came to LSS, she had 3 payday loans at that point left to pay, and for just one of those 3, she was paying $95 of interest every 2 weeks on a $770 loan. $95 of interest every 2 weeks for the $77 loan. This is a hardworking person who's trying to fix her finances, but she's painted into a corner by a particular product that she didn't know was going to work this way. She and others who take out payday loans tell us that they're angry at themselves, and they have a sense of shame and regret about falling into this trap. This is what's actually happening on the streets in Minnesota, working people who are living paycheck to paycheck, and at one point, just one, they take a payday loan to fill in some living expenses. But the way it works now is the norm is not to be able to pay back the first loan and to take on others with escalating consequences. In fact, an escalator is the metaphor I'd like to leave you with. When you step on an escalator, it moves you whether you plan to move or not, and it moves you in this case toward multiple loans, things like not contributing to your retirement fund, default on student loans, going into bankruptcy, often bankruptcies that were preventable. So in closing, I'd just like to share that Lutheran Social Service, I'm proud to say we've been in this state serving since 1865. We don't take a lot of stands on public issues, members. We don't. But on this issue we have, LSS specifically supports the regulation of any financial product that creates a cycle of indebtedness and thus contains an unfair feature. We support the passage of this act. The clients that I represent and that Cherish, our next testifier, represent can't afford to miss any hours of work to come tell you their stories. And the sense of shame they feel and express to us at being trapped is something that Cherish and I are fortunate or unfortunate enough to carry the message for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your testimony. Cherish Holland.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Cherish Holland, and I blew in from the Wilmer office of Lutheran Social Service. The wind is behind me, and the blizzard is coming. So,
thank you for that good news.
Yes. Thank you for allowing me to share my client stories with you. Again, I am a financial counselor with Lutheran Social Service in the Wilmer office, and I've been doing financial counseling for 17 years with LSS. And I am going to be sharing two stories with you. The first story is about Darcy, and she is a 34-year-old single mother of a 10-year-old son, and she was served last month in our Minneapolis office. She talked to a financial counselor, and she, again, like Daryl talked about, she's a single mom who was working 50 hours a week, not only her full-time job, but also a part-time job, trying to make headway on the two payday loans that she has. She has two payday loans that total $2,000, and every payday she is required to pay $200, and she's not able to pay the $2,000 off, so every payday she re-gets a new payday loan. And her net income is about $2,200 a month, so she questioned the counselor how she is ever going to have the $2,000 to pay that loan off. She told the counselor very specifically that she would be able to quit her part-time job and spend more time with her family, if she did not have her payday loans. And, you know, the question is, when will she be able to break that cycle? The next client I'd like to tell you about is Stacy. It was someone that I actually had the privilege of talking with in the Wilmer office. And she works a professional job in the healthcare field. She is an empty nester, which should be the prime of people's financial life. And 2 years ago, she told me that her husband had some legal trouble, and she took out a $500 payday loan, and the debt trap for Stacy was set at that point. She went a full year of paying $80 a paycheck, $160 a month, again, $80 a paycheck on a $500 payday loan. During this time, in order to try to get ahead, she changed her payroll deductions. Unfortunately, that's a tool that some people try to use. And now she owes income taxes. She got behind on her student loan during that time, trying to get on top of her payday loan issue. Even though over the course of the year she repaid almost $2,000 to the payday lender, her bank account was overdrawn several times, and the bank actually had to close her account. So at that point, the payday lender filed a judgment against her for $543. Again, remember, the original amount was $500. She'd repaid over $2,000, and they have the right to do that. But they filed a $543 judgment against her. At that point, her credit score and her self-esteem sunk to an all-time low. When I asked her about her experience in taking out the payday loan, if it was a positive or what she had to say about it, not putting words in her mouth, she very specifically told me, "It was never a positive, and I would never in a million years do that again." Again, I've had many years, I've worked with thousands of clients through Lutheran Social Service Financial Counseling, and I have never seen a payday loan be a positive financial tool. They are a debt trap. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Up next, we have Renee Bergeron. Sorry about that.
And Madam Chair, I think we've got the next two testimonies that are going to join us together.
All right. And that would be Veronica Langer. As well. There we are. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead, one of you, and start.
I'm Renee Bergeron. I live in Duluth, Minnesota. I'm a single mother of four kids. And
my name is Veronica Gadelis Langer, and I work with a nonprofit in Duluth called CHUM, and I am an advocate with Renee.
Well, thank you. Go ahead and proceed with your testimony. If you want to speak into the microphone, that'll help.
Okay, sure.
All right.
In 2005, I was short money for Christmas. So I took out a loan because my parents had already helped me with Christmas, so I couldn't ask them again for extra money so that I could buy something. So I took out a payday loan, thinking that, you know, it was great, there was presents under the tree, and then it came time for the money was due, and I hadn't realized the interest that I was going to have to pay, and it really wasn't going to take care of the money I borrowed. And then I became short for rent. So then it started a cycle of going to multiple lenders because I just didn't have the money. And it came to a point where I was paying about $600 a check of just interest only, and that was not even paying any of my bills. And I did lose my apartment. We did have to go to a shelter, and then we became into transitional housing, which is what I'm in now, even still, and that was 2005. I was referred to a community action program in Duluth, and that's when we kind of sat down and looked at all the paperwork and really had to look at the trap that I was into, and there was no way that I was ever going to get out of it. I had to just completely stop paying it, let the checks go through the bank, and just deal with all the calls, judgments. Student loans kind of went back, you know, couldn't pay them either. When all was said and done, I owed about $4,000 in loans. I had about 8 of them because some of them were up to $800. It was horrible. I'd say payday loans definitely made my situation worse. If I had any other options, I definitely would have taken those. I never would have, you know, I do have a college education. I never would have done that if I didn't need it as bad as I did it at that time. And usually, you know, like sometimes, you know, people can't budget or have troubles with budgeting, and they don't have the most resources or best of credit. You do turn to something like that because it's quick, it's easy. And we're just a prime target, and I think the payday lenders, they thrive on people like us that are just in need and they're desperate, and they know that it's going to turn into a long-term situation. Then they offer refinancing, flip the loans, next thing you know, because you just paid all that interest, now you have no money, so you're like, yeah, let's increase it so that I have money again so I can pay something. And yeah, those are just something that's just easily available. But I just want to thank you for listening to my story, and I hope that something can be done to save others from getting in the trap, at least educate them more in the interest.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your story with us this evening. Thank you so much. Okay, members, we are now going to have Ron Layton. Rob Layton, pardon me. And Paul Cassidy first. All right, Paul, you're up. Welcome, Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Go ahead.
Members, good afternoon. My name is Paul Cassidy. I'm with the law firm of Stinson Leonard Street. I'm here today to speak in opposition to the legislation before you on behalf of our client, Payday America. Payday America operates 15 locations throughout Minnesota, employing over 100 employees, and provides loans to thousands of customers every month who have short-term credit needs. In addition to the negative impacts on our employees, this bill will effectively eliminate over $100 million in short-term credit currently available in Minnesota, cutting off tens of thousands of Minnesotans who each year access short-term credit. This legislation will have the complete opposite effect of what supporters of this legislation intend. This legislation will force individuals into worse options when they need a short-term credit resource. By limiting their choices, you drive them to higher cost, unregulated lenders who use less than ethical debt collection practices and for whom you as a regulator have no control over. These choices include obtaining loans on the street from loan sharks, in the black market, the internet from both offshore and onshore lenders, unregulated lenders, from unregulated sovereign nation payday lenders, and from border state lenders, some of whom are unregulated, at fees and interest rates much higher than allowed under current Minnesota law. I'm proud to report that we are unaware of any material complaints from Minnesota consumers involving our loans. Loans written by regulated consumer loan and payday lenders, regulated by the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Minnesota's regulated short-term consumer loan industry has become a safe, reasonable, and responsible place for consumers seeking financial products. Putting us out of business or restricting customers' access to credit doesn't reduce the demand or the need. It simply leaves a $100 million hole in our consumer credit market. The supporters of this legislation say that there's no underwriting conducted with these loans, and therefore consumers are unable to repay their obligation. Nothing could be further from the truth. Less than 2% of these loans we write go into default. To be clear, we don't make loans to customers unless they have verified and sustained incomes and they have the ability to repay the loan. Who are our customers? Our customers are middle-income Minnesotans. They're educated, 94% of high school diploma or better, 56% have college degree or better. They're families, they're young families, 68% are 45 years old or younger. They're stable working class people. They work for the state of Minnesota, they work for the Mayo Clinic, they work for the University of Minnesota. They are not poor. Our customers are intelligent Minnesotans who sometimes find the need for a short-term loan, and they do not want their financial choices reduced. Madam Chair, if you'll indulge me for a few minutes, we'd like to play a video. A few of our customers are in the audience today, but we want you to hear some testimonies from our customers. They're hardworking folks that couldn't make it here today.
He'll help you with that.
Go ahead.
Minnesota's middle-income earners. Who are they? They're the folks who earn between $25,000 and $50,000 annually. They're educated, they're younger, with families. This is still a stable working class. Short-term credit is what allows so many Minnesotans to cover those unexpected and unplanned expenses that come up. Whether it is everyday needs, special circumstances, or unforeseen emergencies, consumers have a variety of financial obligations. When the average consumer doesn't have the ability to pay cash, they also have plenty of options. Some, if a Visa or MasterCard is deemed them worthy, use a credit card. Still others, if a big bank is deemed them qualified, will take out a loan. Some, in desperate situations, will go to a faceless internet loan where they can get trapped in a cycle of debt. In Minnesota, consumers have a better option in a line of credit offered by a variety of companies like Pay America. Our customers have evaluated their options, and here are some of the reasons people have chosen to utilize a Payday America line of credit.
For me, with a married and five kids, you know, kind of helped us get by pretty good there, and, you know, I found it to be a little necessary, especially around the holidays and stuff. I just started a new job, so it was good to kind of tide us over. It helped me meet my, you know, mortgage payment there, because I'd just been, you know, changing careers, and it was a little bump in the road.
In the wintertime, my wife is a seasonal worker and only works in the summertime, so in the wintertime in particular, we can get the bills get a little tight. I have great credit, and I could go do that, but I own a house, I got a good job, but sometimes I just come up a little short.
At least here, I know what the fee is. I know that it's a set fee every single time. When I sign it, they tell me what the fee is. They circle it for me, so it's kind of right there for you to see, you know.
Payday America has fantastic rates. I mean, I've been here a couple times over the last few years. They're great in a time of need. You know, I can do just a two-week stint. You know, I need some quick cash. I've got bills or, you know, stuff rolling over from the holidays. It's easier for me to do 2 weeks at a time instead of doing, a traditional type loan.
College graduate from the University of Minnesota. I know, you know, interest rates and all that stuff. I know how to do accounting and stuff, and I was aware of everything that your program offered and the fees, and I found it to be a fair trade-off for what I was trying to do.
But what about those other options? Why do consumers of Payday America lines of credit choose this responsible alternative instead of credit cards, traditional bank loans, or the internet?
Well, I've already had some experiences with payday loans online, and I'm still getting harassed from some of them, and they're all paid off already.
It kind of saves me from having to do like a lot of my friends have done and go online and get those loans and trap themselves, so to speak.
I looked at some, you know, short-term, smaller loans from my credit union, local banks here in town, and I just wasn't able to find the financing I was looking for in the time frame I was looking to pay it off in.
I would be stuck. I mean, like I said, there's no other place around here, and I don't want to deal with online no more because I had some bad experiences there. So.
If it wasn't an option, I honestly don't know what I would have done, especially in my car situation. I would have maybe tried to apply for a credit card. I don't like having credit cards personally.
There are unintended consequences to taking away consumer choices. Often, Payday America lines of credits are cheaper than many other options. And sometimes, a Payday America line of credit is the only good option.
Yeah, I'm 30 years old. I made some bad decisions when I was younger. Credit cards were my arch nemesis. I was living a millionaire lifestyle on a $40,000 a year job. And if this wasn't here, it would be very tough. My wife and kids would definitely suffer. This is a safe route for me to solidify any, you know, debt that I may have out there or pay off any bills that may arise. You know, with Christmas just behind us, getting into the new year, this is an easy route for the average person to come in and do some sort of financing that's going to work for them and be feasible, most importantly being cost effective.
It would probably just hurt a lot of people. There's some people that maybe have bad credit and they can't get other loans, and you know, they have car repairs too, you know. So if this wasn't available, some people probably just wouldn't have what they needed.
I don't see how the bill would help anybody at all. I mean, this is another option to banks, credit cards, or whatever, and if you don't have options, I don't see how that's of any help whatsoever.
As you consider legislation that affects real people and tries to further regulate a very specific financial practice that benefits thousands of Minnesotans each day, please understand that you may be harming the very people you seek to protect by eliminating an important financial option used by working Minnesotans to responsibly pay their bills.
I would just say, think about it. One day you may need some help. And if Payday America is not here to help you, then who will? Remember that.
I wish that they could experience being where you need money and you don't have no place to go to get it. I think that would really change their feelings on this, because it's not fun when you don't have no place to go and get money to pay for some of your bills.
At the end of the day, you know, this really helps lower class people or middle class people like myself get by.
I would contend that those that are pushing against it really don't understand it.
If I didn't come to Payday America, I would have been homeless, you know, so it saved me and my family.
Go ahead, Mr. Cassidy. Continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of you, as Representative Atkins alluded to, will recall that we passed legislation in 2009 to make our payday laws, in short, consumer loan laws in Minnesota, some of the toughest in the country. Supporters of the legislation before you today are simply opposed to this industry and these loan products. If you enact this legislation, the demand for this credit is not going to go away. You'll force payday to narrow the number of loans it can write or force it out of business. This in turn will eliminate over 100 Minnesota jobs and a critical source of short-term unsecured consumer credit. Let me also address the legal loophole issue contained in Section 5 of the legislation. There is no loophole. There are simply two different Minnesota statutes that permit different types of financial institutions to offer different types of loans and services. This loophole characterization is misleading. Payday America is licensed as an industrial loan and thrift institution under Chapter 53 of Minnesota statutes. An industrial loan and thrift as an industrial loan and thrift, Payday America has greater flexibility in the products and services it can provide its customers. Under Statute 4760, the only product we could ever offer to anyone would be a single payment unsecured loan up to $350. It simply provides us the flexibility to offer our customers what they want. The ability to offer these other financial products and services comes with increased regulatory scrutiny. The licensing requirements for an industrial loan and thrift are far greater than that for a traditional payday lender. The Minnesota Department of Commerce conducts periodic in-person audits of our company that scrutinizes our activities. There's no so-called loophole, just an expanded range of services that are greatly appreciated by our customers. The legislation before you is a solution looking for in search of a problem. We're unaware of any, and I repeat this again, of any complaints that have been filed with either the Minnesota Attorney General's Office or the Minnesota Department of Commerce regarding regulated payday lenders. I think the testifiers that you heard before, I'd be interested to see if they were actually using regulated lenders in the state or if they were actually on the internet. It would be interesting to find out where those loans originated. The current statutes were first contemplated years ago, and I'm talking decades ago, to protect citizens from unscrupulous characters who operated underground and took advantage of workers. The law was created to bring those transactions above board. Lawmakers understood in 1995 when they passed the payday law, as well as years ago when they passed the industrial loan and thrift law, that without regulation, the business of short-term lending would go underground and individuals would be taken advantage of, and people would turn to the border states or any place else they could get unregulated loans with fees and interest rates significantly higher than what we're talking about today. Madam Chair and members, we respectively oppose this legislation. If you fairly consider the consequences of this legislation and the critical need to provide Minnesota consumers a safe and responsible place for them to access short-term credit products, you will not advance this proposal. Finally, I'll leave you with just a couple thoughts. Please, when you are making a decision about this, take into context the Minnesota landscape. There has been a lot of hype over the course of the past couple of years about what's been going on nationally through the Pew Research Study and others. But look at what's going on in Minnesota. We have a highly regulated industry. We have a safe place for our consumers to go. We have a place for our regulators to go to get questions answered. Don't drive our customers to the internet, to the street, or any place else where they can get unregulated loan products and you can't do anything about it once they get into a debt trap or in trouble. Second, I'll leave you with a question. Do you think it's reasonable and fair to charge someone $35 for the privilege of taking out a $350 loan for 2 weeks? That's really what we're talking about. If you look at in the context of all the interest rates we throw around, I've heard as high as 1,200% from some of the opposition, some of the supporters of this legislation. I've heard 700%. I heard 400% today, and now we're under 400%. Look at this in the context of something that's reasonable that people want, a $35 fee to take out a loan for 2 weeks for $350. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, thank you for your testimony. And Rob Layton, come down. And Stuart Tapper, come to the table, please. Welcome to the committee. Go ahead and state your name. Whoever wants to go first, go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will. My name is Rob Layton, and I'm a partner with the law firm of Nolan, Thompson, and Layton. And I'm here on behalf of my client, Unloan Corporation. And beside me today is Stuart Tapper, who's the vice president of Unloan. And he'll provide you with some information concerning his company, how long they've been in business, the number of employees, the services they offer their customers, and he'll also offer some thoughts about problems that we see with the proposed legislation. And Madam Chair, let me start out by saying that none of us here today question the motivations of the proponents of this bill. We recognize that there have been numerous examples of unregulated lenders taking advantage of individuals in dire financial circumstances. That's the key. It's the unregulated lenders that have been causing these problems, not the Minnesota businesses that are regulated strongly here in Minnesota. The problem with this bill is that it fails to differentiate between the current regulated marketplace here in Minnesota and the problems that have been posed in other states and that we've seen through internet unregulated entities, none of whom we have any interest in protecting at all. We've met personally with Commissioner Rothman of the Commerce Department. We're not aware of any complaints that have ever been filed against our clients or any of the Minnesota-based companies that are providing these short-term loans. We know there have been complaints against the internet entities and other companies that are not regulated, but those are not our businesses. There seems to be a misperception about what types of people take out these short-term loans. And I think that the video you saw today maybe helps correct that misperception, but I do think it's important to emphasize that the customers of these short-term loans are people here in Minnesota with regular jobs and with regular incomes. These are people who have bills to pay, who have cars to fix, who have everyday issues that they have to deal with. Many of these people live paycheck to paycheck, as so many Minnesotans do. They may not be a bank's preferred customer, but these are responsible people doing the best that they can. Now, maybe when some of us face financial difficulties, we're able to pay our bills with credit cards, or we can go to family members or friends and ask for a loan. But I'm sure that all of you recognize that's not an option that works for everybody. Some people simply can't do that. These types of loans are a popular choice for many Minnesotans because they address their specific short-term financial needs. And as Mr. Cassidy said, the rates that they pay for these loans are much less than these individuals would ever have to pay when they bounce a check or they have a late payment on a card. What this proposed legislation is going to do is it's going to drive customers from the well-regulated Minnesota businesses that provide these short-term loans to other channels that are either much less regulated or not regulated in any way. We simply ask that you consider all of these issues and the likely unintended consequences of this bill. Now, with regard to the specific proposal, I want to just point out a couple of concerns that we have, and Mr. Tapper will discuss others. One of the specific concerns has to do with the arbitrary limit of only having access to 4 short-term loans per year. That's simply an arbitrary number that was just plucked out of the air. And I would ask you, if the need arises for a particular individual or a particular family, who should decide if they might need that 5th small short-term loan at the end of the year? Should it be the family? Should it be the individual that knows their own particular circumstances? Or should it be people that have no idea what their personal circumstances are, but they've decided there will not be another short-term loan? Another concern we have with this legislation is the arbitrary debt-to-income cap of 41% that's found in Section 4 of the bill. When most people are paying 30 to 40% of their income for their housing needs, if any of these individuals would have a car payment or child support or a student loan, they would quickly come up to that 41% cap and they would be ineligible for these short sorts of short-term loans. I know that Representative Atkins said, look, we're not trying to eliminate this. People might have 3 or 4 emergencies, and this law says they could do that. They could continue to take these loans. Well, they couldn't if they came up against that 41% cap. And I would suggest to you that many of the people that need these services would bump into that 41% cap for the reasons we've discussed. Another concern we have is how the utilization of the private consumer reporting service would actually work. Is there one in Minnesota that presently exists? What will be the lag time between reporting a transaction and it showing up for other lenders to see so that they would not be in violation of this law? And is there any risk that a consumer's private financial information could somehow be misused through this newly contemplated reporting system? I think those are all questions the committee ought to discuss. Now, we certainly have other concerns about this proposed bill, and we've met with Chairman Atkins and we've expressed some of our concerns. And I certainly look forward to working with Chairman Atkins if this bill should progress so that we can address some of these issues. At this point, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn things over to Stuart Tappers, the Vice President of Unloan Corporation, for his comments about his company, this industry, and some of the concerns he has about this bill.
Very well. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Stuart Tapper, and I'm the partner and vice president of Unbank Company and Unloan. We operate 14 locations where we offer a variety of financial services, And 9 of these locations were licensed as an industrial loan and thrift, and we offer a short-term unsecured loan product. We have been licensed as a currency exchange since 1984, and we have been licensed as an industrial loan and thrift since 2004. And we currently employ over 50 employees in our locations. And we offer a variety of services, as I've mentioned. Part of the reason when we decided to go into this short-term loan product was we wanted something that had more flexibility to it. The industrial loan and thrift certainly did that. Some of it allows us to conduct some of our check cashing business. It's got a variety of other products. So it was done for that reason. Also, the small loan license that currently is in existence is really is capped at a $350 rate, which is not sufficient. The intent of this bill will be to effectively kill the product in the state of Minnesota. This product is designed to be a short-term product, similar to, for instance, taking a taxi from here to the airport. Now, could you take an airplane from, say, the St. Paul Airport to the Minneapolis Airport? Of course you could. It would be a ridiculously amount of money for it, but it would be a misuse of that product. Same way you could take a taxi instead of from here to the airport in Minneapolis, you could take it to New York. That cost would be, again, absurd compared to what an airplane would cost you. As some of the other people have mentioned here, military lending is capped at 36%. We do not do any military lending whatsoever. In terms of, there were testimony that there were people that were coming in and rolling over the loan. That's in violation of Minnesota law. We are not able to do a rollover. People have to take out a loan. They have to pay off the loan before they can take out another loan with us. So, again, in this example, it obviously was not a regulated Minnesota company. We have just finished an audit with the state of Minnesota. The Commerce Department came. They reviewed our files. They found everything to be in good order, and it was a short, very successful audit. Going back to the bill here, 4 loans per year. It's an arbitrary number. You've got 50% of Americans that live paycheck to paycheck. What is an economic emergency to somebody? Is there a limit on how many times their children could get sick? How many times their car could break down? I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Continue.
I don't think there are restrictions on that. And as a result of that, a number like that is just an arbitrary number. Putting the onus onto the lender to verify the number of loans done within a 365-day period is also very, very difficult for the lender, as well as the 41%. To verify that, we do not have access to a customer's bank records, so we are dependent upon the information that is given to us. Earlier it was stated that we don't underwrite the loans in a sufficient way. I can tell you that at our company, we try not to lend 25% of their net pay, because we understand that they have other bills that are required to pay. They've got rent, they have food, and all of those could at times become economic emergencies to our customers. The industrial loan and thrift statute is one that has been in existence since the 30s. There is no loophole here. It's just simply a different way of offering a product which gives more flexibility to the people that are using it. If this product disappears in the state of Minnesota, it will force our customers, similar to the ones that you've heard from today, who will say that they probably had to go to internet lending or they were going to unlicensed lenders, loan sharks, whatever it would be. They certainly would not be coming to licensed regulators. Minnesota has amongst the toughest laws in which there are still storefronts available offering this product. This bill would kill that quickly. If the small loan license was viable, why are there not more loans made under that product? Now, the difference between the industrial loan and thrift, companies need to be heavily capitalized. There's also more oversight by the Department of Commerce. Why wouldn't this state want all their lenders to be under that same scrutiny? Why would they want them? Why would they want them under a different law? Is what I would ask. And finally, the small loan license, it goes up to a max of $350. And we have, our customers have told us that is not necessarily sufficient for their uses. I am happy to answer any questions, and thank you.
Thank you. And members, we're at that point where we can ask the questions. So I'm going to start with Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions here. First of all, it seems to me there's some confusion on who's making the bad loans. Is it a regulated company, regulated by the Department of Commerce, or is it unregulated, such as the Internet or Sovereign Nation or one of those types of situations? I'm concerned about if this bill would pass, what we're going to be doing is we're going to, I think this would be the Loan Shark Protection Act, because you're going to be putting people that can get from a legitimate company like Payday America over to loan sharks, and I don't think you've seen anything until you've seen one of them. Is there anyone here from the Commerce Department? I would like to know if the Commerce Department, Commissioner Rothman, has a position on this bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are here. They're on their way down. Or he is.
Madam Chair, while they're making their way down, I would note that loan sharks actually have lower interest rates than some payday lenders. If you do the math, and I'm not being facetious, folks. If you do the math on the here scenarios of $95 every 2 weeks on a $700 loan, of $200 every 2 weeks on a $2,000 loan, $160 a month for a $500 loan, you're talking in excess of 800%. And my understanding, loan sharks charge 200 to 300. Some are more. It's not a regulated industry, Representative Davids. But in some instances in Minnesota, we have payday lenders where we have them going back and forth from payday lender to payday lender in this industry, ending up with situations where they're incurring 800 or 900% interest.
Well, Madam Chair, and
Davids.
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, are the ones you're talking about with these exorbitant rates, are they ones regulated by the Department of Commerce, or are they the Internet or the Sovereign Nation ones that maybe we should be going after?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, and I'd be happy to defer here, but in some instances, part of the problem is we don't exactly know, because you can literally, under current Minnesota law, you can go from one payday lender, a legitimate, regulated, bricks-and-mortar payday lender, and not be able to pay that one. So you go across the street to the other payday lender. And if you're a military family, and you know around military families, these folks tend to gather because you've got, as Colonel Moran said, it wreaks havoc on junior troops. You go back and forth. And nobody's keeping track of how many loans that we're talking about. So it could be completely with bricks and mortar folks here doing business in Minnesota. It could also be among unregulated folks that are doing business over the Internet.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Chair, my concern here is if we have a necessary business, I think your bill, the way it's written now, could have a very opposite effect, or it's not going where you want it to go. So I think we need to distinguish between a regulated by the Department of Commerce lender, which apparently there are no open complaints on whatsoever, versus some folks maybe we should be going after. That's my concern. It seems that you got regulated and unregulated all in the same thing, and the unregulated ones aren't going to go by any law we pass anyways. And we just put the ones that are regulated that there's no complaints on out of business. So I guess my question to the department is there a department position on this bill?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, for the record, Peter Brickwitty, Director of Government Affairs for the Minnesota Department of Commerce, Representative Davids. I think we are supportive of much of what's in this bill. There's been a lot of work that's been put into it, and I'm very happy that Representative Atkins has brought it forward. I think a couple of things. First off, the Commerce Department has taken action against Internet-based lenders. In recent times, I'd be happy to forward some of that information to your office. I don't have it with me. However, I think we're kind of blending two different things. Yes, there are significant problems with Internet-based lenders. That's a national issue, in many cases an international issue. However, here in Minnesota, we have also a separate issue with the number of loans that average Minnesotans, and you've heard various descriptions hear from both sides of the issue of who that client base is and the number of loans that people are taking out. That sets up a different set of circumstances for those individuals, but at the end of the day, there are consumers that are in trouble and have very significant difficulty repaying the original loans. I think the department has spoken with both JRLC, Representative Atkins, certainly with the payday lenders, as you've heard as well. I think we're willing to work with parties to see if we can move something forward, but there is, I think, strong interest across Minnesota in looking at this issue, and happy to work with folks as we go forward.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the gentleman from Commerce, how many Minnesota-based payday lenders are you having problems with?
Mr. Brickwitty. Representative Atkins.
No, I think you should answer the question first, okay. But I'd like to make a point directly to that.
Representative Davids, I, to your question, I guess I would respond by asking, how would you define a problem?
Okay, Madam Chair, and to the gentleman from Commerce, how many Minnesota regulated payday lenders are you have filing charges on or having problems with today?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, I don't have specific figures with me. I certainly can follow up with you. As you well know from our many various dealings, the department isn't able to comment on any active investigations it may have. I do think that we, again, define the issue separately. Are there issues with online unregulated lenders? Yes. Do we have complaints? I think you've heard from a variety of folks here today who are bringing forward complaints to you right this second. I think there's a long...
Madam Chair, to that point, who are the complaints against? Minnesota-based regulated payday lenders or the Internet? You keep saying the Internet. The complaints are coming from the Internet.
No.
I want to know how many complaints, and you don't have to tell me what they are. I just want a number. How many complaints do you have on Minnesota-based payday lenders?
Madam Chair, if I might, there ought not to be any complaints. Representative Davids.
Well, then
the reason for that, Representative Davids, is because we authorize these folks to charge 349%. So long as they're not charging more than 349%, there ought not to be any complaints. What this legislation is suggesting is that these folks ought not to be charged 349%. They ought to have the same protections that everybody else in this room has when they go and get a loan. To be in an emergency situation or be a member of the military and be faced with an urgent situation that arises, and you go to one of these payday lenders, they're doing business under a law that we passed, for which the representation was that they would have they'd help people through emergencies, and that the default rate was very high, so they should be able to charge an extra high interest rate. In fact, what turned out to be true is that they're giving out 10 of these on average to every individual who comes and applies. There's not 10 emergencies a year.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, who's giving out the 10? A regulated company or an unregulated company?
My understanding.
Who's giving out the 10
Representative
loans?
Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Davids. My understanding is the average payday borrower takes out an average of 10 loans per year. If you'd like, I mean, we've got folks represented in the room from Unloan or from Payday America to verify whether or not that's the average that they give. I think we ought to ask them.
Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, where in your bill do you cap those exorbitant interest rates?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, by putting a limit on the number of times that you can go, it causes this rollover effect to stop occurring. And that's where we get into, we still allow, on a one-time emergency basis, or actually a four-time emergency basis per year, for people to get a high-cost loan. But to have it happen 10 times over and then end up in these rollover situations where the interest rate effectively becomes 800 or 900%.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Davids,
now I'm really confused because we just heard testimony that you can't roll a loan. So how are they rolling loans? They have to be rolling loans with an unregulated company because when these companies are audited, they're going to find out that they're violating the law because they can't roll the loan. So I'm a bit confused here. And if you go four times, who do you go to if you need it the fifth time?
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, I think we described that earlier. What's happening is you go from one lender, then across the street to another lender. And then you go back to the first lender again. And apparently nobody's keeping track other than the individual lenders, but they're trying to, I don't know that they're trying it, but they're making 10 loans a year.
Madam Chair, and to whoever would like to answer this, once that fourth loan is taken, you start in January, and the fourth loan is taken by March, where do I go for the fifth loan?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, that's the whole point, is at some point it stops being what was represented 4 or 5 years ago as an emergency loan to fix a car, or an emergency loan, as we've heard from Daniel and Charles and Kirk and Ben, all of whom got a one-time, it sounds like a one-time loan, or Renee, who got a one-time loan to fix her car, to a series of loans. And under, and if you're in that situation where you're getting an ongoing loan, then you should be able to be afforded those protections of a longer-term loan, not these two-week-by-two-week loans that end up with an 800% interest rate.
Madam Chair and members, my real concern here is you go past, and I think four times are just picked out of the air, but once you get past that fourth time, where do I go? I go to a loan shark, and we're putting the legitimate payday lenders out of business. And, I mean, the loan shark's got to love this. They got to be supporting this because it puts the legitimate payday lenders out of business so they can then charge whatever they'd like. So I'm really concerned, members, that if we we're mixing regulated and unregulated. And I think you really have to work on separating that. And I would also be asking to change the motion to go to civil law. This clearly has to go to civil law. This is not ready for the general register without a few more stops. So thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Chair, and the gentleman from Commerce.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Representative
Davids, how many emergency loans do you think should be authorized under the statute?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and to the chairman, there shouldn't be a limit. This bill shouldn't even be here. I mean, we have MNsure rates of, that's the real problem. And I'll be asking a question later in the committee meeting today as to when there's going to be some hearings on MNsure.
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm happy to stand for any other questions.
All right. We will go to the next member, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Madam Chair, that was actually going to be my question of the folks who give loans. How many loans do they give on average? How many people do they give one loan typically to? And how many people do they give loans to on average on a regular basis or every couple of weeks?
And Mr. Tapper, I believe will be able to answer that. Would you like to come back down? Yes, just have a seat.
Want me to say my name again?
You could do that, and then we'll ask the question.
Thank you, Stuart Tapper.
Did you hear the question from the member? I'll ask the member to ask again, please, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On average, how many loans does each of your customers get? How many people do you give one loan to, typically in a year? And then how many loans do you give maximum amount, and what percentage of your customers get that regular loan every couple of weeks or once a month? Or
Mr. Tapper.
Well, the question is a multifaceted question, and there is no hard and fast answer to it. The fact of the matter is, I would say on average, our customers are taking somewhere probably more than four, less than 10. What percentage are taking one? I don't have that figure at current, but there are people that come in just to take that one-time loan. And certainly the people that we see that are taking consistently every 2 weeks, it's an issue for us. It's an issue for us because, as I've just said earlier, this is meant to be a short-term product. It's not meant to be permanent financing. It's not meant to be a permanent line of credit or something that can be accessed. This is designed to help people in short-term emergency situations. So when we see someone coming in and taking that product, we then question, should they be looking at something else? Because it is not in the best interest of us. We're what's in the best interest of us is to make the loan to get it repaid. And as it was testified to earlier, I believe at least on loan, our average fee is under $30, which is less than the cost of bouncing a check.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then of the portions that default and don't pay you back,
yes.
On average, how many loans have they taken? Are those the one-time lenders? Are those the repeats?
That it varies. There's no hard and fast rule to that. Certainly, they're not allowed to take out another loan with us until they have repaid the first one. And as you brought that up, let me just add to that. It is a perception that there is unscrupulous collection methods used. Let me tell you that we put anyone that asks us for an extended payment plan, we certainly provide it to them. We're in the interest of helping our customers. We want our customers to come to us to pay their bills, to cash their checks, to wire money, to do a variety of services with us. We are not in the interest of trying to make a one-time quick fee off of this. We are looking for a long-time relationship with our customers. They come to look at us as their financial institution. As a result of that, we provide, as I said, our underwriting is maybe even stricter than what you guys were talking. We don't do more than 25% of their net income. And on top of that, we will give extended payment plans to anyone that comes to ask. If that means paying $25 a month until such time as they can pay it off, so be it. We accept that gladly, and we are happy to do that with our customers, and we're happy to work with them.
Follow-up, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then what's that interest on the when they need an extended payment plan?
The interest rate is 30% is what it is on an annual basis on that. The reason that the APR seems to be such a high number is you're talking about a $30 loan on, say, $350 that you take for a two-week period, but you're annualizing that loan, even though the loan is not done on an annual basis. So you're just taking that fee for that short period of time. And again, what makes the number outrageous? If someone comes in and took out the loan for 3 days, it would be in the thousands of percent. If they were paying a $25 fee, say, for a $300 loan for 3 days, that rate would be extremely high. But the fact of the matter is most of these loans are written for a period of 15 days or so. And if that's the case, that's where you get and I believe in the documentation that you have, I think they've calculated based on a 14 or 15-day period. I would be more than happy to supply you with some of the information. I will give you my card after.
Right. Does that answer your question, Representative Hillstrom? Thank you. Okay, we'll go to Representative Lewis.
Oh, if I could just add one more thing. I said, you cannot do a rollover in Minnesota. It is a violation of the Minnesota statute under the Industrial Loan and Thrift Act. You cannot issue another loan until the loan is paid off. So someone coming in and paying $20 and taking out a new loan, it doesn't happen. Can't.
Well, thank you very much for your help. And Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Tapper, if you want to stay, actually, I have a question for you as well. And before you get all the way back to your seat. So thanks. First, Madam Chair, it's my understanding that the Department of Commerce actually does already collect, or it's in the statute to collect information on how many loans on average are going to consumers. So I believe they should have that information. I don't know if Mr. Brickwetty wants to comment on that or not, but or if staff knows that or not. But it's my understanding that is part of the Commerce Department's regulation. But while he's coming down, I'll ask another question of you that was raised, and Chairman Atkins raised it in talking about the legislation, his proposal. Can you tell me what your company does with regards to members of the military? Because they are covered under federal statute, and that's being proposed to be recodified in state statute through this legislation. What do you ask your customers when they come in with regards to that provision in federal law?
We ask them if they're currently active in the military. And if they're active military, we do not do any lending to military members whatsoever for the exact reason that Representative Atkins had stated. We don't want to cause hardship on their families either. There's a mandated percent rate. It effectively eliminated lending to military families.
Representative Loon.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Tapper, and thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brickwetty, did you want to comment on my previous statement?
No.
Thank you.
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, again, for the record, Peter Brickwitty from the Department of Commerce, Representative Loon. The answer to your question is yes. Unfortunately, the data that I have is on my iPad, which is dead in my bag and not in my folder, so I don't have that at my fingertips for you right now, but you are correct. We do have that data.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And Madam Chair, if I may, it sounds like there's interest on the committee for that information, so if the department would send that over when you're up and running, that'd
Madam
be great.
Chair, to that question, he may not have his iPad, but I've got my handy numbers, which I believe are correct, and that is that the average of 10 is for regulated lenders in Minnesota, to Representative David's point. Unloan is the highest at 16 on average per year per borrower. 5% of borrowers take 20 or more. This is, again, Department of Commerce data. Rollovers are banned, as Representative, or as the opponents noted, but what they do is they engage in single lenders who do a touch and go, where the loan is paid in full momentarily, and then they get an immediate new loan. And that's the method that how you end up with these situations of $95 every 2 weeks on a $700 loan and some of the nightmare scenarios that we heard about earlier. So thank you for asking.
Thank you.
Representative Loon, did you have a follow-up?
Actually, Mark, different question for different testifiers, if I may.
Yes, you may. Go ahead.
Thank you. And I guess I'll throw this out to whoever would like to come down from Lutheran Social Services, Ms. Holland or Mr. Dahlheimer or any of those folks. Just a question about the people that you see that come in for assistance for credit counseling. And I don't know. Are they still here?
Yes, I do see the folks still. Which of you would like to come to the table? Brian? Either.
Madam Chair, while they're joining us, yes. I'd ask for a roll call on this issue.
Sorry, Madam Chair, the folks from Lutheran Social Service are no longer here, but I'll do my best if I could hear the question.
One moment, please, sir. We're going to finish a little business here, and a roll call has been asked for, so we will
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Atkins. Go ahead,
Madam
sir.
Chair, Brian
state your name.
Mm-hmm. I'll try.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Just a question, and you know, one of the testifiers mentioned that she wasn't sure about interest rate or something, but it's my understanding. I mean, the law says it has to be in 24-point font, and that what they're signing, and that when they're taking out a loan. And a couple of them mentioned that they have student loans or have, I assume, a college education or some kind of a post-high school education. So, I mean, are most of the people who are being assisted have some level of education above or at least high school level, or are most of them functionally illiterate? I mean, do they not understand or have a level of education to understand what it means to take out a loan and what an interest rate is?
Mr. Roche.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Loon, I think the best way I can shed light on this is to maybe just try to share with you what I have heard from customers. We've done some focus groups. Actually, we've done several, and the groups that are part of Minnesotans for Fair Lending have talked to hundreds of customers and have done financial counseling, and we've done some focus groups. And I think that there's it's almost like there's two trains of thought going on at the same time. One is being under financial duress and needing money today to pay the bills. Sometimes it's because they're afraid of bouncing a check and the the NSF fees. Sometimes it's because the rent is due. I remember there was one woman in a focus group who said, well, it was an emergency, and I probed a little further and said, well, what was your emergency? And she said, I needed groceries and gas. The telling thing here, I think, is that the Pew research tells us that most people take their first loan out for expected expenses, ongoing, as opposed to a lot of the mythology about this is an emergency. But what is an emergency? It begs the question, what is an emergency? You need money for rent, but it's expected, it's ongoing. The literacy, I've got a contract right here from Payday America, and they, to their credit, walk the customer through, and they circle all of the numbers. And nobody's hiding that, and I think it's fair to say that everything's legal, everything's up front, but financial duress is something that is operating with these customers, and there's no question about it. And I'll say one more thing, and then I'll be finished. Understanding the time value of money is hard, and I think it's hard for everybody. And I'll stipulate that a high interest rate for a short period of time makes sense. I understand it costs money to originate loans. Our problem with this is keeping people in debt over time. It's the debt trap. It's the 10 loans that are average. You know, a great number of customers take out 20 or more in a year, so they're indebted for most of the year. That's not short-term lending anymore. So I hope that helps shed a little light on it.
Representative Loon?
Thank you. It does. And I guess just one other question, and I don't want to belabor this, but so for most of the people that come in for counseling, if they have one of these short-term loans, is it fair to say they have other indebtedness as well? Car loans, student loans, mortgages perhaps. So they've got other debt problems before they...
Madam Chair, I think that's fair. And one of our problems with this product is that the lender doesn't look at expenses. So they will just verify somebody's income. They see the pay stub. Yep. And they don't ask questions about other indebtedness, and they issue the loan, and in fact it's more profitable for them if they can't pay the loan back on time, because then they can issue another loan. And I think that's the debt trap that we're talking about. So, and that's the underwriting that we're asking, because it's a subprime, it's like the perfect subprime product with no underwriting to speak of.
Okay, Representative Loon.
Thank you, and I appreciate that, and I just think, you know, again, you know, it's difficult when you see people making decisions that, you know, some of us would question the wisdom of, but again, you know, holding up that paper, I could see from here,
sure.
The large print, and you know, generally I need these to see a lot of things anymore, but I could see the print, you know, delineating what the interest payment is, you know,
sure.
How much that, and so, and it looked like it's written in, you know, pretty simple declarative language, so thanks for clarifying that.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
It's absolutely true. I mean, the example APR is 278% here. On page 5, the actual, you probably can't read this one,
no.
But this is for a very short-term loan. Okay. It's over 1,000 APR on this one.
Okay.
That's a much smaller type.
Representative Loon, is that it for your questioning?
Thank
or did you have a follow-up?
Thank
okay.
You, Chair.
Yes?
Could Mr. Tapper just respond to that?
He certainly may. Come right back. Come down. Well, and I had a question, too. I'm glad you're coming down, because I'm a little older than most of you here. So in my day and age, when we went to the banker, our hometown banker, and tried to take out a loan, and if we couldn't afford it, he denied us. And so don't you deny anybody a loan?
Yes, we do. We deny plenty of people.
Okay.
It may be the term, if they're looking for a loan that's 24 hours or so, it would seem unfair to give a loan and charge $25 for the privilege of having, and matter of fact, in our provision, it there actually says there's a rescission rate, and I believe it's could be at least 24 hours, and it may be 48 hours. So essentially, there's no loans being made shorter than that period of time, mm-hmm. And the loans that would be, and if the loan is made for that period of time, there wouldn't be any fee charged because they could rescind the loan. In fact, we do. They may not have sufficient income to justify mm-hmm. paying back. There could be a variety of reasons. They could be in a negative cash position at the bank, and if that's the case, to lend to someone like that just wouldn't seem responsible either, ma'am.
And to your point of coming back to the table,
to the
sir,
point.
Go ahead and make yours.
Once again,
case.
There cannot be a rollover done. One loan has to be paid off completely, and they can go and take out a new loan the next day if that's what they desire. But there is, but the loan has to be repaid in full. So there is not a rollover. So they use that word. It is specific that in the statute that you cannot roll over the loan. So that means just paying the interest or whatever. You can't do that.
Representative Dean.
You can come back.
if you'd like. I have a few questions, and if Mr. Cassidy wants to join you, that would be fine, too. Are you aware of this study in 2007 by the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where after they banned payday lending, that borrowers said they were better off without payday loans, that instead they were working with creditors, lowering their expenses, using healthier loan options, and seeking assistance from friends and family, and avoiding going further and further into a financial hole from which they would climb
out? I am familiar with that. Yeah. But okay. There's also reporting that was done as a result of that that showed that the number of NSF checks increased dramatically. It also showed that people in North Carolina were either going to other states to get the loan product, they were going to the internet, they were going to offshore lenders, they were going to other avenues.
Okay. Couple other follow-up questions. How do FICO scores calculate and use payday lending in scores for individuals who are going for traditional loans?
Mr. Tapper.
We don't use a FICO score. We don't pull that.
Representative Dean.
Madam Chair, let me rephrase my question. How do you report the activity of your lenders to different credit bureaus and different individuals?
We don't report it.
Thank you.
Report it, sir.
A couple more here. Another question. Can an individual take out a loan the same day that they repay their other loan?
Mr. Tapper.
Yes, they could if that's what they chose to do.
Okay. And then I guess...
And, sir, just to follow up on that.
Mr. Tapper, I'll call on you, and I'll call on him. You have to go through the chair.
So this is sort of my last question. And you made a comment that you all don't make loans to military families. And as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking you don't do it because the percentage rate you could charge would only be 34% on an annualized basis, which means it's not profitable and not in your interest based on your business model to do that. And I would think that if we have this type of thing, we should require all payday lenders as part of this to make loans to military families and do not charge any more than that 34% as an annualized rate. That's my final question.
Mr. Tapper, would you care to respond to that?
First of all, it's 36%.
36.
Secondly, you've lost my train of thought now with the... previous question, I'm sorry. What was your previous
Representative Dean?
Well, my question was about taking out a loan the same day that you repay a previous loan.
Yes. However, we go through the same underwriting again. So now they have to come in and they have to give us proof again of income. And if their income, if their situation has changed or whatever, they may not be eligible. They may not be eligible for the same amount of a loan. So it is considered to be a completely different loan.
Representative Dean, follow up.
Nope, I'm done. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we're over here with Representative Swedinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question would probably go towards the Department of Commerce testifier. If that'd be possible to have him
come back down. Yeah, really. Pull up a chair.
I guess, you know, a lot of the conversation, thank you, a lot of the conversation is going and kind of focusing on interest rate. How, if you were to guide a group, maybe the JRLC or some other group that wanted to kind of take place, and I mean, there's obvious need here. You know, we had the second testifier talk about that they had a lending station that was maybe four blocks away, and then one moved maybe 500 feet away from their place of worship. And you know, to me that says, you know, if there's a coffee shop that opens, there's people that want to have coffee. And if there's a loan place that opens up, there's people that need loans. How would you maybe help folks that wanted to charge a lesser interest rate and offer these types of loans to do that? Like if they were to open up their own business, how would you, how would that process start?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative, again, Peter Brickwitty from the Commerce Department. I it's an interesting question. I don't know if that would be the appropriate role for the Commerce Department. I mean, if you wanted to become licensed as under current Minnesota laws, an industrial loan and thrift or a short-term lender, there's certainly procedures for that, and our staff would be equipped to assist folks. To your comments about a need, I do think that what the research also does show too is how individuals who who have taken out payday loans and complete that, are able to pull themselves out. How they end up doing that, they do oftentimes turn to the types of entities or avenues that would be available to them before they take out a loan altogether. Charitable organizations, religious institutions, friends, family, much more so than any other source. And so if that was kind of the road that you were going down, Representative, I think that probably would be a question better answered by some of the folks you heard testimony from today or JRLC about how that individual consumer could go about repaying their loan through other means.
I guess it was more just on the acquisition of a loan that was going towards. I don't know if has you know, any of the organizations in here looked at going down this road? Thank you very much.
Well, we'll ask them to come back. Lutheran Social Services.
Oh, okay. Madam Chair, Brian Rushi again.
Brian Rushi.
Your question is about healthier loan options out in the community. Something that we're working on. A lot of faith communities are already doing it in sort of an informal way out of pastors' drawers. I think you're finding that in some cities there's talks now about maybe doing that more formally and being, you know, pooling resources. Holy Trinity itself is embarking on trying to capitalize a no-interest loan fund. In Pittsburgh, the city of Pittsburgh, there's a fairly large one called Grace Period Loan. One of the things I think it's important to do is to stop the predatory payday lending that's going on and develop some healthier products. I think you'll see that the credit unions and the banks are going to be doing this. The national banks have pulled back from payroll advances. I think we're in an environment where a U.S. senator talked about using the U.S. Postal Service in a new and creative way. It's time for conversation, but I think the main thing is to get people to the point where they're looking at healthier options rather than getting into the debt trap.
Well, I think
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I do agree. It's been said many times that you know times are tough for folks, and you know with this you know the jobless recovery we're supposedly having here, minimum wage recovery. You know, I understand that it's tough for families to make ends meet, and you know, I guess my next question would be, you know, so if we're to Chair Atkins, if that would be okay?
Yes, absolutely. Representative Atkins?
Chair Atkins, earlier you talked about, you know, folks going kind of bebopping back and forth from different loan institutions. So would that be, if they're limited to four loans, and they did the back and forth, would that mean that they could only get two loans from this entity and then two loans from this entity in total for their entire year?
Representative Atkins.
And Madam Chair, Representative Swedzinski, yes, the aim is to keep the number, and I think in the language of the bill, I know in the language of the bill, it would establish a private reporting service in addition to their own records that they would keep so that they'd keep track of the number of loans. For example, I'm sure that Unloan is familiar with the 16 loans that they're making on average to a borrower. But it would also enable them to access the fact that there's additional loans being made perhaps at Payday or at other lenders in Minnesota. Hmm.
Sounds good.
Follow
Thank
up?
You.
Okay,
good.
Very good. Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. And if Mr. Brickwitty could come back down. Sorry, we should have...
Okay.
You can come sit over here if you want.
He's getting his exercise today.
Well, I told him.
Although I'll warn you, sometimes if you're in the wrong company, people will talk. I'm with Representative Davids, as I always am, because he's the smartest guy on the committee next, of course, to the chairman. The idea that we're talking about Minnesota brick-and-mortar companies versus Internet companies, and it is the in the myriad of fax numbers, percentage rates, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars we're charging, the one fact that keeps eluding us here today is the differentiation between those two. And with all due respect to the department, if you're going to advocate on behalf of a piece of legislation, I think you should come with those facts. And I don't fault you for the iPad problem, but the question, and I'll ask it again, do you know specifically the complaints coming from the brick-and-mortar Minnesota-based companies versus the Internet companies? Because, and I, you know, I'm not going to ask all the testifiers to come back down and ask their personal data about what their who their loan was with, but that's a big problem, because if we're talking about Minnesota companies versus the Internet, yeah, I'm with David's. Let's go get the internet guys because they are taking advantage of Minnesotans. But I think that is a very important and critical part of the bill and the discussion if so we know exactly who we're talking about here, because otherwise, you know, there's all kinds of scenarios you can make up, and maybe a loan shark, maybe you know, a guy in an alley with a wad of hundreds. But I think it's a critical part of the bill.
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, again, Peter Brickwitty from the Commerce Department, Representative Zellers. Certainly echo your comments about the level of intelligence of Representative Davids and yourself and the chairman. We're setting up a bit of a false choice. And I would go back to, I don't mean to be facetious, but when I asked Representative Davids, what are we defining as a problem? That is a distinction that is, there are different problems with internet-based lenders and problems, if you perceive them to be problems, with brick-and-mortar institutions that are licensed and regulated in the state of Minnesota. For example, the most recent activity, which again I'd be happy to share with you, that the department took against an internet-based unlicensed lender was for unlicensed activity here in Minnesota, making loans to Minnesota consumers. What I believe the testimony you've heard today is setting up a different type of issue. There's a public policy debate to be had about whether or not a consumer who takes out an average of 10 loans from brick-and-mortar institutions in Minnesota, would you define that as a problem? That's a public matter of public policy debate, and you've heard that back and forth today. So I don't mean to be evasive, but I do think we're talking about different issues. There are certainly issues with internet-based lenders. You've heard a little bit about them today. The department has taken enforcement action where we can. We're going to be happy to work with the committee to see what we can do to take stronger and more effective action on behalf of Minnesota consumers against unlicensed, unscrupulous lenders that are internet-based. But again, I see that as a separate issue from what's being talked about.
So, Madam Chair, maybe I'll try it. I'll try it as a consumer. So, I was taken advantage of, and I come to the Commerce Department and I want to file a complaint. What would the complaint that I would what complaint would I file with you or the Commerce Commissioner against, if it's a Minnesota company or an internet company, how would I file a complaint with you?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative Zellers, what type of complaint would it be?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Zellers.
So one of the cases that has been brought up before us today.
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chairman, Representative Zellers, again, if it were an internet-based lender, we have taken those types of complaints, taken action. Again, we're happy to share that information for you. I think to Representative Atkins' earlier point, as long as the actions or the activities of the consumer can certainly file a complaint. Let me say that right off the bat. Contact your consumer response team and file a complaint. Again, if you're operating under the purview of current Minnesota law, the facts of each individual complaint are different, and I can't tell you exactly how it would be determined to go. But to Representative Atkins' earlier point, again, there's a question of whether or not being able to take out that large number of loans is a quote-unquote problem.
Representative Zellers.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that, I mean, I think that is the point of differentiation I'd make for you as the department, bringing up that there are broad brushing all the entire industry, including some of our Minnesota-based companies, without a hard complaint saying, yeah, we've been rolling loans, or they're not checking ID, they're not checking income, they're not checking if I have a job. I think the department is commenting on what Representative Atkins is here for, is a philosophical discussion of how many loans can somebody, should somebody get by the government's definition, versus do you have companies who are operating here under the laws that maybe we haven't voted for, but some previous stuff have voted and passed, been signed into law, and to say that even though those things are legal, you don't agree with them, I don't think you can broad brush those Minnesota companies who are here operating under the, whether it be the letter of the law or the spirit of the law, as people who are taking advantage. That's the public policy discussion. I see the Commerce Department as those, that entity that comes in and says, here's the problem we have, here's the people who are the bad actors, we're going to go get them. And I think that, with all due respect, that should be your focus, not advocating on behalf of Representative Adkins' philosophical discussion about how many loans you should get. And my request is still that we get those specific that specific data. Again, not bringing all the testifiers down, but I think that is very important to the committee, but also for the community discussion of, you know, how do we get the internet operators, more importantly, versus the folks who've been here doing business brick and mortar. Madam Chair, one other question.
Representative Sellers.
Sure. And for the author of the bill, Representative Adkins, the 2009 bill that we passed, Representative Dabney, I think, was the author, and had a number of bipartisan co-authors, Representative Holberg being one of them. Is she a co-author with your bill?
Representative Adkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Sellers, I don't know. I literally don't know. I haven't checked to see who's on the list of authors.
I probably should have just looked. She's not.
I'm sure.
Are there any other questions you'd like to answer for me?
Well, yes. Well, if I've got that kind of leeway, Madam Chair, I move to the bilby table, then I'm just kidding. Back to the philosophical question. I think it was Mr. Howard from the video asked, if we don't have these options, where do we go? I mean, if for all intents and purposes, I know you're not trying to ban this product, but in listening to some of the testimony, there would be a diminished opportunity for this to be provided. Where do these folks go? If they can't get a loan from a bank because of credit, or the one guy said bad decisions as a college kid, where do they go to get a loan?
Representative Adkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Zellers. We're not banning. When the prospect of a ban was brought to me, I said I didn't agree with it, because I do believe that sometimes, just like 5 years ago when we had the bill before us, there are emergencies that arise. Renee in the video talked about her car broke down. She needed something. If she doesn't get the car fixed, she doesn't get to work. If she doesn't get to work, she loses her job. Yeah. So there are circumstances that arise. But how many times, that was the impetus for the bill. Everybody said we've got to do this so that we can deal with those emergencies. And the other reason for the super high interest rate, almost 400% interest rate, was that there was a high default rate. And we've heard testimony from the folks, the payday lenders themselves, that said the default rate is less than 2%. So it just doesn't justify the high interest rate that's allowed under Minnesota law, based on our argument from 5 years ago. At some point, if you would ask Mr. Pender, on my behalf, what's the highest interest rate on any loan in Minnesota that's allowed legally, I'd be curious to find that out, because I'm guessing that the loan that we allow on payday loans is 20 or 30 times. And that's why Mr. Tapper said we don't do this to military families. We don't want to cause that kind of hardship. These are 20 or 30 times the interest rate that we allow on any other loan to anybody.
Thank
you. Okay, Madam Chair. Yes, Representative Sellers.
And again, Representative Adkins, I didn't say you were going to ban them, but if listening to the testimony from some of the providers, they would either be limited or there would be a severely diminished capacity for them to lend. So if these folks do have, say there are 4 or 5 or 6 emergencies in a year, where do they go? I mean, if they can't get a loan from the bank because of credit, or they don't have a bank account, or their credit union won't lend to them as well, so after, say there is 6, you know, and if it's a bad year, the car breaks down, somebody gets hurt, you know, a whole series of bad things, where do they go? And that's, you know, I don't disagree that there's some bad actors in the internet world that we should be limiting, but I'm with Larry. Where do we go? Where do they go? And if it's 4 or 6 or 8 times a year, where do they go?
And I'm sure Representative Zellers, you're talking about right now the 36% interest rate that the unloaned folks won't even make loans at 36%. If they, let's say they loan out $10 million a year, they'd be making $3.6 million on that. Is that not enough? I mean, how much money do we, we're talking about 300 and some odd percent. How much do you need to make in order to feel like you're making a go of it? And now you're talking about, I think with unloan, it was an average of 16 per borrower times that 390 some odd percent. These are just the regulated ones. You keep talking about the internet. Let's not cloud the issue. We're talking about the folks doing business here in Minnesota making 16 loans, who won't make loans to a military family because they can only charge 36%, quote-unquote, we don't want to cause hardship on military families because 36% isn't enough? I'm glad I asked for a roll call, Madam Chair.
Well, and thank you. Representative Zellers, do you have a follow-up? If not, we have three other people on the list that we'd like to get in.
No, then, Madam Chair, I'll let the rest of the committee have fun.
All right, thank you. And we're going to go to Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hilstrom, thank you for asking your question earlier. I had the same one, and I want to thank everybody today. This has been really enlightening, I think, for all of us on all sides of this. And the hour grows late, so I just got one quick question, and Representative Zellers and Representative Atkins were just talking about this. But I'm really curious to know, and I'd like, if Mr. Rushy, if you could come out. One of the things I've been wondering, because I went to a payday loan place, and I talked to some people that were customers, and at least two of the three people that I talked to had checkbooks, and they had checking accounts. And one guy said he liked to go to get the loan there because it was less of a hassle. And the other guy said it's cheaper to pay and get the loan at the lending place rather than the bank because, and he mentioned the bounce check fees and the other fees. And so, you know, I think we have to keep in mind this is a service that helps some people. And I'm really curious, and Representatives Zellers and Atkins were talking about it. In your opinion, or if you have someone else that wants to come down, where do they go? If this passes, are we pushing people to the internet, or are they going to go to a regular bank then? I'm really curious.
Mr. Roche.
Madam Chair, Representative Hoppe, yeah, thanks for that question. We stipulate that this can be an okay thing, you know, once or twice. It's the repeat lending, which is the typical scenario, average 10, that bothers us. So we have in the bill a loan cap of 4, and then you would ask where do people go, you know, for number 5, and we would say anywhere else but going deeper into debt. And what the research shows is that when this product is not available, like in states like North Carolina, they do a better job of getting in touch with their creditors and trying to make arrangements. Like, I'm not able to pay the full amount. I'll pay what I can. Let's work it out. And generally, people do that. They try to work it out. Mm-hmm. They borrow from family and friends. They'll sell stuff on eBay. They'll pick up a few more hours at work. They'll pawn something. But anywhere else but going deeper into the debt trap, because you're worse off, you know, for having to pay off the payday loan in terms of paying your next month's expected bills. And by the way, this product really wasn't around until 1993, so I think we can all get a little nostalgic and ask ourselves, what did people do before 1993? It barely existed starting in 1993 and has really come on roaring on the scene in just the last, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years. So to some extent, this is about people finding again the healthier things that they did.
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Rushy. And I might have been 2009, I don't remember, but we had a discussion in this committee about banking, and we had at least a couple of people that came in and said they were running businesses where they would go out and get a loan. And I remember a woman who was running a catering company, so she would go get a loan, pay for all the supplies for the catering job, and after she got paid, you know, I assume typically over a weekend, she'd come in on Monday, and the question then was why. You know, I think we have a lot of people still out there that don't have a regular bank account. And here we have some people that might be the case or some people where they do. It's just what they choose. And I understand what you're saying. I just worry that we're taking away an option that might drive them to even higher risk or, you know, if we're going to, you know, I didn't want to use the word regulated, but unregulated or less regulated internet or whatever it would be, I think that's a worse option. And one last question. I have the same question I'd like to ask Mr. Cassidy or somebody from the other side, the same question. If this passes, where do people go to get a loan? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Cassidy, would you like to come
Madam
down?
Chair, could I give a quick response to one aspect of
you
that?
You sure
I
may.
Think you asked me. We have some evidence, if you look at states with and without payday lending, that the amount of borrowing that happens on the internet is about the same. It's almost indistinguishable. So this idea that we're going to be after 4 loans, after loan 1, 2, 3, 4, driving people to the internet, I don't think is true because in states that don't have payday lending at all, the internet lending rate is about the same as the ones that have it.
All right, thank you. Mr. Cassidy. He'll answer. Do you want the question again?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Cassidy. I same question for Mr. Rushy. I'm just wondering, in your opinion, if this passes, you know, 6 months down the road, where are people going to go to get short-term loans?
Mr. Cassidy.
Madam Chair, Representative Hoppe, probably the same place they went before we adopted an industrial loan and thrift statute or a payday lending statute. They'll go back to the street. Internet didn't exist back then, but they'll go to the Internet. And by the way, on the Internet issue, I think, I mean, how would we ever know? I mean, Internet lenders don't report to any state agency or any federal agency. They work, you know, in back rooms and dark places that we don't want people to go to. They work offshore. They're international lenders. There's people around the country. There's loan sharks on the street. So the answer is, you know, going back to 1993, I'd love to. You know, there's a lot of things in this world I'd like to go back to. But the fact of the matter is we adopted laws because people were abusing our customers, our citizens. That's why we put these two laws on the books.
Does that answer your question, Representative Hoppe?
It does. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
One last, it's not a question, but Representative Davids was talking earlier, and I'm trying to read my notes without my cheaters on so I don't look so old, but Representative Davids was talking about this, and I don't know if he made the motion before he stepped out or not, but did we talk about sending this to civil law?
He did say something about
it. Yeah, and I'd like to amend the motion to send it to civil law. I think it needs to be checked over and let the legal people take a look at it.
Representative Atkins.
To that point, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hoppe. We reviewed it. We actually visited with the folks from civil law a little bit. We removed the item that they in particular raised for us, which was relative to immunity. Everything else is fully within the bailiwick of the Commerce Committee. So that's my opinion on it would be I don't see unless you're going to send every bill to civil law, because they all impact civil law in some fashion. Is that what
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I was on civil law once. I don't want to send any bills there if I don't have to. In terms of bailiwick, we all agree that we have the most wide purview of any committee in the House, and I was just curious. I normally don't like to send things to civil law, but you can't blame me for asking.
Well, thank you for that question. We're going to proceed now with Representative Anderson, who has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of questions. And maybe just a comment to piggyback off of what Representative Hoppe said. I am very concerned that this doesn't change the problem. People are still going to go out and seek short-term loans. The difference is that instead of seeking them from Minnesota-based companies, they will either go to Wisconsin. I know Ms. Bergeron from Duluth, I'm guessing that's maybe one of the places that she went to at some point, or they'll go to North Dakota or South Dakota, or they go to the Internet and go to these offshore sites that we have no regulatory control over, and those folks have no recourse. So if they do run into problems with those folks, they can't come to the Minnesota Department of Commerce and ask for help because that help is not available to them. They have no options at all. Or they get into a situation of having credit card debt. So, I mean, I think that's some of the concerns that I have with this, because this bill doesn't actually stop short-term loan lending. It just changes where the location of it is going to be. But I guess my question is going to be for Mr. Brickwitty, if you could come down, please.
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Brickwitty, could you tell me what the fiscal note is on this, please?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I can't at the moment. I do not believe the Commerce Department has been asked for a fiscal note on this bill.
Madam Chair,
Anderson.
Mr. Brickwitty, I think that it would be good to get a fiscal note on this, considering that the department is going to be asked to determine whether a private service vendor is available to verify all of these. This has a huge verification component to it, and that the Department of Commerce is responsible for that task. So, you know, typically when we give new duties to an agency, there's a fiscal note attached to it. And I think that would be helpful for us to know what kind of cost are we going to expect from the state, how that's going to be funded, how that all works.
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I think the Commerce Department would be happy to complete a fiscal note if requested. We aren't able to complete one until the legislature asks us to complete one. So.
Representative Anderson.
And Madam Chair, too, I'm assuming that you've done maybe a little bit of a background research into this. Have you found if there is an actual service that could provide this kind of verification? And then also, what kind of security measures does the Department of Commerce have in place to protect people's information? You know, we've had a lot of problems with Minsure, obviously, with the data breach that they had there. putting out people's Social Security numbers. Is the Department of Commerce prepared to protect people's credit information, since that will be part of the verification process? And what kind of things will they do with this private vendor that they hope to find to do this verification? What kind of things will they check into to make sure that they actually have the security measures in place to protect those consumers' data?
Mr. Brickwitty.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, this is not a Department of Commerce initiative. I defer the first part of your question to either Mr. Chairman or to the advocates of the bill. I think that to your second question about is the Department of Commerce able to protect consumer data, I believe that we are. Data protection is a very serious part of what the Department of Commerce does. We, as the licensing entity for over 300,000 Minnesotans. We regulate over 20 different industries in the state of Minnesota. We have a large amount of both individual and business-specific proprietary data that comes to the department as a regulatory entity. We take that very seriously. We have very strong protections in place and very strong procedures for in the event, however unlikely, that there is an incident, that we would take that very seriously. So I think the Department of Commerce has been, will continue to be, prepared to handle any sort of private data if asked to do so. But again, I would defer the first part of your question to the advocates for the bill.
Representative Anderson.
And Mr. Brickwitty, so are you aware of any vendor offhand that would be able to handle this task of doing the verification on whether or not people have the financial resources to go out and do these loans? I mean, you've read the bill. Can the department, are they aware of a vendor that has those capabilities?
Mr. Brickwitty. Representative Atkins, you want to take it?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I think that's actually for the author of the bill.
Oh, sure.
In terms of the financial wherewithal, we're asking the companies themselves to do that with respect to sharing the data to figure out how many of the borrowers have sought over the course of the year. We'd work with the industry to get that set up.
Okay. And Madam Chair and Representative Atkins, but in your bill you also ask that the department is involved in some way to make sure that the verification is taking place. Have you talked to the department about that? What kind of feedback did you get from the department initially?
Madam Representative Chair, Representative Anderson, to the extent they've indicated support for trying to figure out a better way to regulate the payday lending industry, but in terms of the deeper elements of that, no.
And Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, do you know of a service that exists that can do this verification that you're looking to have done?
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I would expect the industry folks to work together to set up that here in Minnesota, but I suspect that there are entities that do that as well.
Okay, and Madam Chair and Representative Atkins, so when do you expect to have your fiscal note for this bill?
Representative Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I don't expect that there will be a fiscal impact on the department. It doesn't seem like it's a heavy lift for the department to do it.
Okay.
Representative Anderson.
But Madam Chair, Representative Atkins, we won't know that unless we have an actual fiscal note that says that it's negligible.
Representative
Madam
Atkins.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, I expect to visit with the department about that issue.
Great.
Representative
Thank
Anderson.
You.
Any further questions? Mr. Roche, did you want to respond?
Madam Chair, just to Representative Anderson's question about does this exist anywhere else, and the answer is we're very much modeling this idea and what happens in Indiana, and that's a place where the payday lending industry self-finances. I understand it's an assessment that's less than a buck a loan, okay. And the regulatory agency in Indiana has the responsibility of looking at it to make sure that it's real time, that it's legit, that it serves the purposes. It takes some time, I'll admit that, but I think, as Representative Atkins just said, it's not a heavy lift in Indiana, and nor should it be here.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for coming back down. We have one last question. Representative Schoen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think Representative Atkins covered it while I was going to clarify some things on the hardship to military families, but I'm sure you'll finish up well, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, members, I think that has been well vetted here. Thank you all for your questions. Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and in light of the hour, I'll be quite brief. I appreciate the questions. It's been very helpful. I appreciate the testimony from both sides. As was noted, this does not end payday lending in Minnesota. You can still get an emergency loan up to four times a year. All of the folks in the video that said they thought this was an important thing to continue, we're talking about one-time incidents. There was one fellow that referred to a couple of times. So when you talk about, you know, where are people going to go, for the first four times, they can still go to a payday lender in Minnesota. After that, though, the likelihood or the ability to continue to charge 392% for a loan, what I would propose to anybody who is opposed to this today is come to me. If you want to have unlimited payday loans, I'd be open to that. Tell me what interest rate. Representative Zellers, is there an interest rate?
Representative Zellers.
No, because I don't have a suggestion. I have one suggestion for your bill.
I thought you might, and I wouldn't pick on you if I didn't think you'd give me a good answer back. But if the interest rate right now it's 392%, is it 36%? Is it 45%? Anything less than 392%? When we talked about the military families that. Aren't being, as Mr. Tapper said, we don't lend to them because we don't want to cause hardship on military families. If you have a different interest rate and you want to keep these loans unlimited to everybody, come to me with that interest rate. Otherwise, let's look at other options like we are here. All we are doing is extending to folks, hardworking Minnesotans, working families, military families, the ability to have the same sort of protections, the same sort of modest interest rates that everybody else in Minnesota gets. And with that, I'd appreciate your support for the bill.
And with that, Representative Atkins renews his motion that House File 2293, as amended, be re-referred to the General Register. And he has requested a roll call vote, and the clerk will take the roll.
Atkins?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Poppy?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Anzell? Davids?
No.
Dean?
Aye.
Falk?
Aye.
Halverson?
Aye.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Ortman?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Lilly?
Aye.
Loon?
No.
Sanders? Schoen?
Aye.
Slocum?
Aye.
Sundin?
Aye.
Svedzinski?
No.
Tice?
No.
Woodard? Zellers?
There being 12 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Madam Chair, just very briefly, I'd like to ask the Chair a quick question.
Go right ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair. I received numbers today from MNsure that show that we are far behind the lowest of the lowest projections. Is it your intention as Chair to have hearings on MNsure in this committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Madam Chair, Representative Davids, we haven't decided that yet. We do have a Legislative Oversight Commission comprised of a bipartisan membership that has been meeting on a monthly basis now. I'll let you know when we decide, however. Thank you.
And thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair, because I'm very concerned because the projections are that the numbers aren't going to, we're going to have a huge multi-million dollar shortfall on its funding, and I think we'd better take a look at it.
Okay. With that, we are adjourned.